Hello and welcome to episode 65 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we have two very special guests on our show. Chris and Renata have both tirelessly worked on building the first ever cricket academy in the Czech Republic. Since they started this project in 2015, they have dealt with rejection, theft, extreme weather conditions and culture barriers.
Just 3 months into 2018, they've managed to reach over 10,000 kids and introduce them to the sport. Despite the resistance they faced from many locals who have no idea about the sport, their hard work has paid off in terms of sustainable funding and even getting the local government and mayor involved in their local leagues. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Chris and Renata. This is the first time we've had two guests on our show, and also the first time we've had a Czech on our show, and also the first time we've had a Northerner on our show. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for having us.
So Chris, I've known you for a few years now. I met you in Prague during a cricket game that I played. I'm also pretty sure I scored a hat-trick that time, but it's better details for now. but back then, I wasn't fully aware of the cricket scene and, you know, the intricacies involved in introducing a sport like cricket to Czech Republic. So before we get into any of that, we always like to start off from the very, very beginning. We did that with Nishant as well, and there were some tears. So we hope nobody cries today. But Chris, could you please just tell us, like, where were you born and were you always into cricket or even like sports for that matter?
So I was born in a place called Mansfield Woodhouse, which is close to Nottingham, Sherwood Forest, you know, Robin Hood country in the UK. And my dad was a big football guy. He represented like the centre of England and stuff, and he was a big football coach. So he pushed me in that direction. And then I think it was around when I was 7 or 8, one of his friends played cricket and they were short on a particular day. So I went and played for them. I stood at third man out in the deep, running from one side of the field to the other for a whole day. And I absolutely loved it. I didn't do anything. I think I stopped the ball maybe twice. But since then, sort of 7, 8 years old, absolutely loved the sport and continued playing since.
So Chris, your job right now is to introduce cricket into the lives of, you know, Czech people, especially children. But growing up, can you think of any similar influence that you had that directed you towards the sport?
Well, a few people, I guess. A guy called Chris Revel, who, interestingly enough, I went over to the UK last year to do my coaching course, to become a coach. And he was one of the tutors on the course, which was an amazing coincidence. Another guy called Phil Meadley, Lee Wilkinson. These are just guys who basically played for the cricket club that I played for, but like gave up their time to sort of teach the next generations of how to play. So yeah, they spent many an hour teaching us how to play cricket and throwing balls at us really fast.
When you were playing, Chris, were you exposed to like an academy, or was it just like a school club, or how serious was it?
Well, I pretty much started with adult cricket and then got into like softer ball cricket after that. There was no real academy at the club that I played for. It was quite a small one in terms of junior setup. But it started, I don't know, maybe under 11 or something like that, where you'd play in pairs. And then you work your way up through the age groups in that, up to around under, what would it be, under 17, I think, was the most. But by that time, I was already playing every Saturday and Sunday, 46 over games on a Saturday and 40 over games on a Sunday. So lots of cricket was happening by that
sounds
time.
Super boring.
How about you, Renata, though? What was your childhood like? I'm pretty sure there was a lot of skiing and ice hockey, but did you even know about cricket as a sport when you were growing up?
No, not at all. I was born in communism, and I just knew about cricket when I was like, I don't know, like 18, 20. There was something like cricket, croquet, you know, polo. There was all the same for me. And then when I met Chris, he told me he plays cricket, and I was like, so I should probably find out what it is. So that's how.
Mm-hmm. And you came in first.
Did you play any sports at all when you were growing up?
Yeah, it was tough because it was time of communism. So we had basically like a football and volleyball. And then when I was like 15, we started to play softball as a new thing in the Czech Republic. But yeah, we had like athletics and gymnastics, but we didn't have so many possibilities. Like the floorball is here in the Czech Republic like for 15 years now. So it's pretty much new. So, and cricket is really, really new for Czechs because they just want to play some tough men's games. And we now we are trying to tell them that it's tough too, but it will take some time, I guess.
well, the Czechs have added their own Czech spirit to the cricket because everyone just drinks beer and pivo as they're playing cricket. So I think they've added their own touch to it anyway.
That's
so.
A lot of influence of the expats as well, though. Coming in and drinking, definitely.
So, Chris, Mina told me when she told me about you, she told me how, you know, she remembers that you started working at the age of 16. And it's so fascinating to me because at that age, my parents were still providing for me and I was in school and I wasn't even aware of the big wide world around you. So what got you working at such a young age?
It was even younger. It was when I was about...
Oh my God, I'm so glad you said that. I thought you were going to say, actually, I started working when I was 20. That would have been so awkward, but I'm glad it was younger.
Thankfully, it was the other direction. No, it must have been when I was about 14, I think, if I remember right.
Really?
I got a job in a restaurant that was, I don't know, 10 minutes away from where I lived, working in the kitchen. And I was washing dishes, which was... I was actually just talking to Renata about this the other day. It was really an amazing experience and learned a big life lesson in there. The story I told the other day was before that, you know, I was playing a lot of sport. I was captain of the football team. So, you know, I was thinking I was this big guy and I got into this job and the boss asked me to do something. But I was really busy, you know, cleaning the dishes, this really important job. And the boss asked me to, I can't remember, take some plates somewhere or something. And I said, no, I'm too busy. And everybody in the kitchen just stopped immediately, started looking at me like, you're an absolute fool. You've just made a really big, really wrong decision. So that's an experience that certainly stuck with me. How I came to going into that work, money. But back then, I just wanted more money to spend on toys and new cricket bats and things like that.
So did you drop out of school, though?
No. This was all part-time work. So I'd work in the evenings and Saturdays and Sundays.
So what brought you to the Czech Republic?
I was studying in Sweden. As part of my... I went down to Brighton. That's where I was studying my Bachelor in International Business. Spent a year out in Sweden. And studying international business, I loved traveling at the time. And one of the few firms that did trips for MBAs, MBA students, like specialized study trips, was based here in Prague. I started applying for jobs and I got an interview, came over, and the rest is history, really. Yeah, I got that job and moved here. I was only expecting to be here for maybe 18 months. And this is 8 years ago.
but then you met Renata.
A few years later it was. A few years later we met again.
And Renata, what about you? Because Chris has informed us that you play a big role in the Cricket Academy and everything that you've been doing so far. So were you planning to do anything like this when you started working?
No.
No.
I did a lot of things, like for work as a job, but I'm mostly like a project manager. I always start some business, you know, do the website, tell them how the process should be and stuff. So I'm used to go through all this process, but I never thought it will be about cricket, really.
So both you and Renata met through your work and you're in Czech Republic now. So, Chris, I moved to Czech Republic in 2012 and I'll be completely honest, it really was a daunting experience. Maybe because I didn't move directly to Prague, I moved to Hradec Králové. So it's a bit different. But I mean, for me, when I still remember that the roads were always empty on a Sunday morning, I had no idea how to speak the language and barely anybody spoke English. So when I first moved here, I was completely bogged down in my studies and didn't have much time to explore the Czech culture. But now that I'm in my final year of living here and after a lot of, looking back and thinking about all these things, I've realized that slowly the Czech people are much more open to new ideas and new cultures. I don't know if you resonate the same idea or not. I don't know if you feel the same way, but Chris, when you came here, you came here to a completely new country, not speaking the language, and you tried to start a new life here. Do you see the same changes that I have, especially in the last maybe 2 or 3 years?
Definitely. I always tell friends when they come and visit here that when I first arrived, if you tried to order something in a restaurant, even if you tried to do it in Czech, the waiters would look at you with disdain, like, you're bothering me, you know? I'm here just to sit down on this chair and relax, and you want me to bring you a drink, you know? Like, That's what it felt like, but it's completely the opposite now. I think there's been a big revolution in, like, customer service, especially.
Can I say something? I also think we are not Americans who are really open to you straight away. We are just more like we are waiting what you are, who you are, what you want from us, and then we open. And we are more friendly then, you know, so we need to little bit like know you to be open. But then we are really better friends, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Renata, you've personally seen the changes in this country yourself. As you mentioned earlier, you lived in a time when this country was going through communism, and now things are totally different. So, Renata, like from your point of view, how well do you think families are adapting to this change in Czech Republic?
I think, like in economy way, definitely we don't have any problem with that. We are more free, and we are doing very well. The mind is still kind of same because we are learning from our parents how to think. And to be honest, like that's the part of the communism idea, because people could just go to police when you said something wrong. That's why the people who look at you doesn't want to tell you straight what they think, or doesn't want to open to you, because they don't know if you still are from the communist party, and you don't want to go to police and tell on you that you said this against the government or something like this. So I think this is still in our minds. So that's the big thing in our heads, which is changing now, because the generation which is like new, they don't have it anymore. But me, my mom, my grandparents, they still have it, of course, because... I mean, I was 6 years old when the communism, fell. But but my parents were teaching me, just shut up, do it, don't say anything, you know. So, you know, it's in your head, of course.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, you came to live in Prague. You started working here. You met Renata. But what exactly got you into the cricket scene in Prague?
It was a stipulation before coming here. I did some research to see if there was cricket, because if there wasn't, I wouldn't have moved here. I'm such a cricket nut to do the research.
I'm lucky.
So I'd already reached out to, because initially I started in Brno for about 6 months, I think it was. So I reached out to some of the guys in Brno, but just at that time there was a decline of cricket in Brno. Which is the second city in the Czech Republic. So I would travel from Brno to Prague of a Saturday morning, or Sunday maybe, to come and play cricket, and then travel back after the games, which was good. And it's just a pure love of cricket that, you know, I think I could have lived.
So you moved to Prague just because of cricket?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay, wow, this is going to be couples therapy at some point.
Yeah, pretty
But, you know, Nishant from Radio Cricket, he interviewed Dan Casey, and he told him about that one cricket field that they found on the outskirts of Prague to use as a pitch. And how did you manage to get hold of that land, and how did you get permission to use it for a sport that the Czech people were not even aware of at that point?
We were incredibly lucky, really. There's a guy called Hugo Banks who lives here, and he, his family, or his wife's family, owned some farmland, basically. And there was a golf course being built around this area, and the golfers were being quite aggressive with the owners of this farmland in saying, you have to sell your land to us. We're converting it, all of the land here, we're converting it all to the purpose of sport. So you've got no choice, really. Either you're going to lose everything, or you're going to sell it to us for no money at all. But Hugo is very much a headstrong person. I hope he won't mind me saying it. And he basically said, screw you, fine, we're going to build a cricket pitch if you're going to do the work for us to change the permission or whatever you call it for the land. So he got started work on building the first pitch. But the land was big enough to do two fields next to each other, basically. And this was, what, six years ago or something now? 5 years ago?
Probably more now.
Yeah.
And did the cricket scene start building when this land was available, or was there any cricket going on before that as well?
Yeah, there was cricket going on before. We used to play at a place called Vipik, which is much closer to the centre. It was like a park almost, and we used to have, it was like a storage bunker nearby, and we used to have a plastic pitch called a Flix pitch that we used to roll up and then wheel it to the pitch, roll it out. And it was the worst pitch ever to play on. It was I'm a batsman, and to try and score any runs on that. And because it was like a park, there was like a pathway that the grandmas would walk, which was the direct route from where some houses were to a shopping centre, which was on the other side. And they would just walk across the pitch. And, you know, we would like say to them, please, can you walk around? You can see there are flags we've put out. We put a big sign there with an arrow to like, please walk around the field. These babichkas, which is like grandma in Czech,
yeah.
We're like, no, this is our field. We're going to walk straight through it. So, you know, wow. We'd have to stop 5, 6, 7 times per game as we waited 10 minutes for an old grandma to walk through the field.
wow, that must have been really difficult to get anything done. Like if you're trying to hold a league or you're trying to play matches, that must have been so difficult.
Definitely. It was before my time. The majority, I played there only for 2 years, I think. And the majority of the games initially were the 11 guys they could find here would play against English touring teams. Because for the English teams to come over here, obviously it's a very attractive destination, especially in those times. When the pound was really strong against the crown, the drinking, the nightlife here and everything.
Here is cheap.
Yeah, exactly. And then it sort of progressed. More and more people here wanted to play in those games. So teams branched off and then they could start playing against each other here as well as against the touring teams and things like that. So it all stemmed from there, really.
But now you hold local leagues and you have also the very famous Pepsi Cup. There's so much going on, thanks to that one field, thanks to Hugo. and I also remember when I was in Prague in September during the Pepsi Cup, I remember the mayor of Vinohrady came to present a few trophies during the Pepsi Cup weekend. So you're really getting the locals involved now.
Yeah, that was a big step for us. It was the first time that we've... we have some cooperation with the mayor of Vinoge anyway, but it was the first time that we've actually got them up to the field to see a bit of the cricket and take part in one of the ceremonies. So that was really amazing. We have two 40-over leagues, two divisions and two leagues going on. So there's plenty happening. And we're trying to get more and more in with the locals.
And Chris, you just mentioned that you have two leagues going on, but what is the ratio of Czech to expats in the number of cricket players here?
There's one Czech, no?
No.
That's very convincing, Renard.
I don't know. In terms of people who have actually... Because, this is going to get really technical and a complicated answer. There's many definitions of Czechs. There's the Czechs who have lived in Australia, for example, learnt the game there, come back here with their family and played. Or there's people that have actually learnt here how to play. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really consider as the true natives. And in that case, Renata's probably correct. There's probably...
One
Czech.
Well...
It's really
and that's Renata, maybe.
I was just going to say that's probably Renata.
No. We don't have women to play. So, girls, if you want to play... You are welcome.
Yeah, so
you know?
that's something we'll get into later, Renata. I would like to speak about women's cricket as well, but we'll get into that in a minute. But just for the sake of our listeners, I'd like to point out that Czech cricket is obviously growing and developing through the hard work of many individuals in the cricket scene. But what Chris is currently doing is sort of a branch off that, and he's working on the cricket, I'll say it in Czech, the Cricketová akademie, which translates to Cricket Academy in Czech Republic. So we'd just like to focus on that for the next bit of this interview.
But if anyone would like to, you know more about Czech cricket and its development, I think we can leave the Radio Cricket's interview with Dan Casey in the show notes as well, and you can have a listen to that. But Chris, you tell us that Renata is a huge driving force behind the work that you do. So can you also tell us how this idea came about and how both of you started working to build, you know, such an amazing academy together?
So basically, what would it be? About 3.5 years ago, I got a bit of money saved up. I was working in sales at the time in IT, and I was looking to buy a flat, right? Take the sort of next step and get a flat. Progress into, you know, the run-of-the-mill life with the working for the man and all that sort of stuff. And to be honest, I wasn't really happy at the time. I wasn't enjoying the work. Even though it was going well, it was rewarding well financially. And Renata sort of said to me, like, why are you sort of going after all these material things and doing it in a job that you're not enjoying? Why don't you do something about cricket? Which was basically something that went against everything that I'd ever believed in about life. It was okay for me, with my upbringing, it was get a degree, get a great job. Mm.
Get the money,
get the house, get the car, get the 2.5 kids with a nice dog.
That's really interesting, Chris, yeah. Because, you know, we always relate this sort of idea with Indian families. Yeah. I think Ankita can agree with me as well. We say, you know, our parents say that get a degree, get married, have kids, and then you can do whatever you want with your life. That's what our parents always tell us. It's really interesting that you were raised with the same idea, considering that, you know, you're raised in Europe and in the UK as well.
Yeah, exactly the same. I was listening to one of your podcasts again this morning, and exactly the same. And to break from that was a really big thing, and it's something I definitely wouldn't have done without Renata's influence. I mean, she was a massive driving factor in it. But I think you saw how much I enjoyed the work with the kids, like when you came to the tournament. Yeah,
yeah. I can say for me that he wasn't happy, and the problem why he didn't start this was he didn't believe it could work, because he wasn't used to do like a company and leading and stuff like this. And because I was project manager, I was able to start a company and do the basics for him and do the processes which he needed. So he could basically focus on the cricket side, and I would do the, you know, the base side for it to work.
The managerial side of things. I was just going to ask you if that is what you concentrate on more. Yeah.
So Chris, when you say that you left your job and you started this cricket academy, what was the thought process behind it? Because obviously you have to weigh out the pros and cons, right? And as we said, that you're developing cricket in a country where they've never even heard of the sport, where they probably thought it was baseball for most of it. So
that would have been an advantage if they thought it was baseball.
Yeah. Really?
Okay. I can say they ask us, the one parent asked us, how do we get the horses to the school, you know? So, I mean, yeah. So the cricket...
Horses?
Yeah, horses, because they thought polo is the thing. And like, wow. Cricket croquet, even on the e-shops, when you're looking for cricket things, it can happen that there are croquet things. And, yeah, you know, they just mix it up, or they don't know at all what it is. So
that's hilarious. I've never heard of them.
Yeah.
You would need a whole other budget for the horses. Yeah.
But Chris, what were the pros and cons going through your head? Like, obviously you love the sport and you love what you do, but obviously you have a life that you need to live. You need to bring food on your plate. You need to pay your rent. You need to pay your bills. So what were your thought processes behind all of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a big jump. I was basically taking the money that I had from, like, obviously saving up for getting the flat and taking a punt almost.
Also, I told you I have some money saved, and, you know, I will just cover you with something. So,
So you just dive straight in with what you had. And Chris, we know that Mike, I met Mike as well in September. So for our listeners as well, Mike is, I think, is he an expat as well, Chris?
No, he's a Czech. But because his parents are diplomats, he spent a lot of time in Australia, and that's where he picked up the game.
Uh-huh. So I met Mike, and he's also involved in the work that you do. And you personally told me that he's also helped you tremendously. In fact, when you go on the Cricketova Academia website and you watch your videos and stuff, Mike is very present over there. So what role does Mike play?
At the moment, unfortunately, like we had to
part ways for financial reasons. We didn't have enough money coming in to be able to support us. But he was massive in the beginning. He's really helped, especially like going into the schools. So everything from, because we're basically starting from scratch. So finding a way to get the game across to the Czech kids that they understand as brief as possible, because we only have like 45 minutes of contact. So streamlining the way we introduce it, creating the materials that we create for teachers and our new coaches. I guess we'll come on to that a bit later.
And you should know one thing. Chris doesn't speak very well Czech. So everything that was in his idea in English, we needed to translate to Czech. Even when he went first time in the school, he learned everything by heart.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to be able to say it. So now he knows how to say it without, you know, learning that by heart.
Yeah,
but in the beginning, it was everything he needed to remember, basically.
Well, I mean, picking up on that point, like it wasn't a case even of learning it by heart in the beginning, because I had Mick there with me. So I'd sort of be guiding Mick in what I think is going to work and the way it can go. But I was picking up phrases and ways of saying things from him. You know, like run faster to the kids or like great stuff or whatever. I was learning that from him. And it's only been over the last few months where I've basically been going there solo, where it's like, oh crap, what do I do now? I have to do the whole introduction, explain everything. So Renata like prepared the text for me and had to learn it off by heart and get it myself.
Yeah, we did an audio. And he was listening to it every day, every minute when he was outside. And, you know, then he said it to the kids.
That is some dedication, Chris. Yeah,
that's incredible.
And I feel like we haven't asked the obvious, but what is the Cricket Academy and what are you guys actually doing? Can you just explain to our listeners?
Okay, so we're going into Czech schools and doing, like, they have their regular PE lessons, which are 45 minutes. We go into these PE lessons and show them cricket. Most of the time, it's for the first time. They've not even heard of it before. We get them playing. We get them screaming. And before we go, we make an agreement with the school that if the kids are interested, we can offer an after-school club. So we take some flyers in. So the kids who are interested, we'll sign up for an after-school club. And then we run those after-school clubs. So we have something like 14 after-school clubs going at the moment. And so they're our main two focuses at the moment, are getting in and actually having that first touch with the kids and then having the after school clubs. And this is starting to progress into like away from school clubs. So it's like the next step in the progress. So we're trying to go from the real bottom, like the proper grassroots, and build cricket up. So we're going to be creating eventually over time, a pathway for a Czech kid to start playing cricket, to love the sport, to continue playing, and give them an opportunity to get to where I am now, where, you know, still absolutely loving the sport.
No, we want them higher, no?
Yeah, okay,
we want
them to own the
games. Yeah, Chris, we want kids to be better than you.
Yeah.
And Renata, because you handle the managerial side of things, you know, I think this question should be directed at you. How does the funding side of things work out with the academy?
Yeah, it's kind of the first years it was like our sources, I can say. So, you know, everything what Chris made his work is just gone. But now we have some funding from Czech government.
Yeah, Ministry of Education.
Yeah, Ministry of Education. We got some sponsors too, right?
So a big plug for Lily White's foundation.
So basically the parents and the kids don't have to chip in at all?
Yeah, they do. For the after school clubs, they do. For the intros at the schools, that's free. But then, they pay for the after school clubs. Yeah.
And since we're on the financial side of things, how long ago did you start the Cricket Academy, Chris?
September 2015.
Yeah, so two and a half years. So when you started this, I'm sure you must have had like some financial plan in mind, right? Like, you know, we're putting this much money. Oh, you didn't? Because obviously you have to, when you're doing something like this and you expect the kids and the parents to chip in as well. You also need, like for example, you and Mike or anybody, you're also giving your time, right? And surely you would need trainers, you would need coaches, you need help. So do you pay these, do you need money to pay these people as well? And are you at that capacity where you are able to pay people to help you?
I can say, I'm sorry, but I can say that the plan changed according to what was the like demand. We started with something, then we found out it doesn't work. Then we did a new strategy. We found out we need to change this to this to this. So that's basically project management, that you start with something and basically you end up with something else.
Yeah.
So like, we thought like our main will be something else than what we do now.
Yeah, in the very beginning, like our initial strategy was very much to replicate what I know from the UK.
Right.
And that flopped. That did not work in the slightest. So we realized we needed to backtrack and get into the schools. But I think there's always been an underlying feeling, philosophy, strategy. I don't know if you can call it a strategy, that if people are enjoying the sport, if we get more people playing, we'll make money some way or another, be it through grants or like contributions from parents. And we've had to adapt the model, let's say, of how we're going to make this money. Because we don't want to make it too expensive for the parents, so it puts them off bringing their kids and allowing them to play. Because they've already got enough reasons not to send their kids, you know, so we definitely didn't want finance to be
another one.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just going to make an observation that in India, for example, we have these big celebrities and sports stars building academies with the money that they have. But to think that you started off with nothing of that sort, just using up all of your savings to build this academy, I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, we faced the most difficult task, that was that nobody knew the sport, like at least from the Czechs, nobody knew that sport. So we tried with the adults, but that was just a fail. So we needed to start with the young kids to get them play, to get known what is cricket. And then they will tell the adults and it will go like this. Just basically we need to grow our adults who will know the sport.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was even a step in between that. We went to the adults initially to try and get them to play. Then we thought we'll get the youths, so like between, I don't know, 13 and 16 to play, because then they're going to be easy fruit, the low-hanging fruit to get them straight into the leagues within 2-3 years or something.
But they were taken.
Yeah, they've already chosen their sport at that age. So we had to go back even further.
That's the problem we had in Gibraltar as well. So in Gibraltar, sports are free to everybody and everyone. So we never had to pay for anything. So the problem was that when we were kids, we were exposed to everything. And we were just so confused. We were like, we don't know what sport we want to get into. So every sport that we did play was kind of like half-assed. We were never serious about anything in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But when I've come to Czech Republic, for example, I see that kids actually have to pay to be part of a table tennis club or to be part of a football club. So they're completely invested in that sport. So I think, as you mentioned, Chris, that if you have kids at the age of 13 or 14, they're probably into the ice hockey or into the football. So it must be very difficult to bring that change in. So surely, I think it would be better to start off from a very young age, at a younger age, like 8 or 9 years old.
Even younger. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what we've done. We start at 6 now. Mm-hmm.
Is this a cult, Chris? Or is this an... I'm kidding.
No comment. No comment. Yeah.
So I just want to ask you how you deal with certain crisis situations that come up when you're least expecting them, especially in the early stages, because we know that there was a time when your equipment got stolen.
Twice, yeah.
Twice? Mm. Wow. How did you deal with it, and what exactly happened there?
We cried.
It was really devastating. Basically, one of the sides, because we're trying to find different ways of making money, in small portions. And one of them is that we started an e-shop for cricket equipment. And on both occasions, there were major tournaments happening here, which we were organizing. So we decided to do like a mini kit stand at the venues. For anyone that's, you know, organized one of these type of events, it's completely exhausting. So on both occasions, I came home on the last day of the event, I think it was, and left the stuff in the boot of the car because I was just so drained, so exhausted. Came upstairs, had a bit of a sleep, and somebody found a way into the car and helped themselves to whatever they fancied. The first time, they took absolutely everything. Like, the car was completely emptied of thousands of crowns worth of stuff. Thankfully, on the car insurance, I paid a little bit of a premium. So we had, like, a portion of it covered. But the second time, we didn't go through the insurance on that one. But yeah, the first time they took everything. The second time they were like, oh crap, yeah, we forgot this was cricket equipment. We can't sell this. So they left the cricket equipment and took everything else, basically. Which,
wow. Sucked. And I also just want to mention to our listeners that when I was in Prague in September during the Pepsi Cup, I still remember that Chris actually stayed overnight in that field to make sure that the equipment was fine and the pitch was, you know, there was no problem over there. And you even had to hire a security guard, I remember.
Yeah.
Stayed there all night to make sure. So this is the kind of dedication we're looking at, you know, where Chris stayed a whole night in a field, which I just want to mention is freezing in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And Chris stayed there to make sure that the equipment wasn't stolen. This is the level of dedication we're looking at, because you guys have no choice, right? You're at a stage where everything is so important to you that just losing your equipment can bring you down so much.
Yeah, I mean, when it was stolen from the car especially, it was completely devastating. Because we had such a good feeling from the tournament, you know, like we managed to pull it off, everybody was happy, everything had gone well, and then we go down to the car and everything's missing. And it's just like being hit with a sledgehammer emotionally. Mm. It was a real, real downer.
And Renato, you just mentioned that when you introduce cricket to the Czech people, they mentioned bringing horses, which is something I've never heard of. But how did you, obviously you're a local Czech, so how did you use your knowledge of the local people and your knowledge about the way things work in this country to build all of this from scratch? Like, how do you approach parents and try to convince them that this is a sport that your kid is possibly going to like and there is a potential future in this sport?
Yeah, we were thinking about it a lot. I can say that even my friends weren't too supportive, and I said like, oh, my boyfriend, he's, you know, player of cricket, and they were like, what? You know, no. And I was like, yay, I know. That was before I know that cricket is actually very, very like demanding on your strength, power and thinking, and now I love the sport. Right? And we needed to tell the parents and all those adult people who think it's like they take it as a, you know, sport where you sit, you are in white clothes, you just drink your tea, you don't do anything, it takes 5 days, you know, very boring thing. So we needed to tell them that it's not boring sport at all, and it can be really fast, it can be really only like for those who are smart and strong. And that's the idea which we need to tell them all the time and remind them it's not for, I'm sorry ladies, for ladies, right? Mm-hmm. Sport or just for like kids or I don't know. It's just very, very strong and very like a brain demanding sport, right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was important for us.
Yeah, I think to add here, there's a step even before, like us getting to the parents and sort of convincing the parents. It's convincing the schools even.
Yeah.
Just to let us in, right? What we offer to the schools is free. We offer them, I will go in, or Mick and I would go in for best part of 5 hours and teach classes back to back for free. They have to do nothing. They just have to bring the kids along with their teachers. We bring all the equipment, they don't have to pay anything. And still they'd say no. You know, like they wow. just didn't even want to...
give it a chance.
Yeah, exactly.
But Chris, that must be quite like an emotional toll, because like I've seen you go through this, and I can imagine for 5 hours giving everything you have and then for someone to say no, like how do you pick yourself up again to just go back to another school the next day?
Yeah, well, this is slightly different. I guess you're mixing a couple of things there. Like the people that would say no would be the teachers before we even go in to the schools. But you're exactly right. When we're actually there, it's so exhausting. Like over this last week, I did 32 intro classes for, what was it, 755 kids or something like that. And on when Friday came around, what time was I in bed? Like 7 o'clock or something? But I could have gone to bed at like 5 when I got home. I was just completely beaten.
But the kids love it. So even the parents are calling us after and they say, I got some flyer for cricket, you know? And my kid want to attend, you know? Okay. So I said, okay, you know? So where can I sign? But yeah.
And one of the things, I'm just going to add to that. One of the things we have to ask the parents is about any medical conditions that we need to know about. And one of the parents said that the kid cannot jump into water.
Wow.
So that's the level of knowledge of cricket we're working with.
But since you brought up the medical conditions bit and the question that you asked, I'm also curious, do you guys have a special kind of insurance? Like, you have to be insured to be trainers like this, don't you?
Yeah, there's like a general liability insurance.
Right.
Like that runs through the company, yeah.
And you, apart from getting your training as an instructor, do you have to go through like first aid training and all of that as well?
That's essentially, you've hit on essentially where Cricket About Academy has started. Interestingly enough, because Renata is a first aid trainer, and that's how we met the first time. She was my first aid trainer, and she screamed at me during the first aid course because I did something wrong.
It's not true.
And a few years later, I needed to do a first aid course for the guys at cricket, and of course, Renata had stuck in my mind as the number one first aid trainer to go to. So she came in and did the course for us, and then was it the next day or something? You came to the tournament, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and since then we do first aid courses. Like we Mick and I have the UK qualification for coaching, but in first of all that's all in English and it's all for people who understand cricket. So for our coaches that run our after school clubs, we've had to create something ourselves to first of all get them to understand the game from scratch, and like teach them how to teach, I guess, cricket. And part of that course is the first aid course, which, yeah, we make sure that all of our trainers have, just in case.
I'm sure that, you know, through the academy, your aim is not only to introduce cricket to the Czechs, but also to build maybe national teams that can play in junior competitions, in European competitions, and, you know, one day even on the world platform, fingers crossed.
Yes.
is that the plan?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, Renata should answer this question because she's the most patriotic person on the planet.
we strongly believe that cricket could become like one of the national sports of the Czech Republic, I guess. Yeah, because people love it here. They just, you know, the kids love it. So I hope like when they are older, they will keep the cricket as the main thing they want to play. And it could be just one of the biggest sports in the Czech Republic. That would be really great. And then we could definitely go, right?
I hope so. I mean, it's a bit of a sensitive topic in terms of national teams because there is a Czech national team already. But in terms of the number of Czechs in that team, it's the one.
Right? It's the one, yeah.
There's one Czech in it. So you've got Sri Lankan expats and Pakistani expats, British expats in there. And it's the same all across Europe and in many countries around the world. But the Czechs, like the native Czechs, and I'm not trying to discourage them from playing in the national team, but it shouldn't be that the whole national team is made up of expats. It should be the best players in the country. And, you know, fair enough, at the moment, they are all expats because there's no Czechs playing. But the Czechs are so talented at sport. I mean, they're really good. Just a couple of weeks ago at one of the schools I went to, there was a kid who was batting, you know, in this first introductory session, like unbelievable, you know, like I went to him after and we sent a message to the headmistress and everything saying that this is the most talented kid I've ever seen. He was unbelievable. And there's that sort of level of talent, but all we need to do is give them an opportunity, get them to play. And then we'll start seeing, you know, the first Czech kid will break into the team because they're that talented. And more will come through. And that's the way I see cricket should be around the world, rather than just being a game for expats, which is great for the community. As an expat myself, I've absolutely loved having cricket here. It's been a massive part of my social life here. But also it should be played by the locals. And that's something we're very, very much focused on. is getting the locals into that national team. It's obviously going to start at around under 11 or something like that, hopefully next year, but then progressing all the way up to the big national team and the World Cup, the Olympics, you know, world champions eventually.
But for now, you started off in Prague, but do you have plans to move through, you know, move around through different cities?
Yeah, I mean, according to the plan we sort of set maybe 6 months ago for this spring, we should have already been pushing towards another city. But to be honest, things have been going so well in Prague, we just haven't had time. Like we're fully booked most of the time. We're expanding our capabilities capacity wise because we're exceeding our expectations of where we'd be right now. Which is an amazing thing, you know. I'm not trying to complain in any way, but what that's doing is sort of making us focus on Prague. And then once we've got this sort of next 2 weeks, that's when all the after-school clubs will start again for the spring. Once we've got this out of the way, then we can sort of focus again. I think come the autumn that we'll start looking at the other cities. But it's going to be better because we're going to have a lot more experience behind us from what we've been doing.
Also, we now have problem that we have this first level for the, you know, year or grade 1-5.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the kids doesn't have any like club or anything where to go. So we need to work on this, right? The older kids, we have the adult league, which is like for our Českomoravský kriketový svaz, for the main organization, does the adult leagues and stuff. We do the first grade of the kids. But then the kids are kind of, we don't have anything prepared for them too much, right?
Yeah. But I mean, that's definitely going to come in time. Like you mentioned about these older kids that we're going to be opening as they get older, the next level of these after-school clubs. Plus, this spring, we've already got one out-of-school club started, and this spring, four more will start. So there's going to be some pathway for them to go. But you're exactly right there. We've got to look at building competitions for these kids to get them playing more. And
Well, they do need some sort of motivation, right? Something to look forward to. Because having an after-school club is one thing, but then obviously after some time, they'd want to be playing more competitively at least.
Definitely. Well, yeah. I can tell you, like, especially... It was announced recently that the Czech Republic has been included in the World T20 qualifiers.
Yes, and it's also with Gibraltar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which is amazing. And you're in the same group. Czech Republic and Gibraltar are in the same group.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I don't really know who I'm supporting, but I'll see you in time.
I'm going to enforce, so you've got to cheer for us there. Well, the underdogs, the outsiders. but yeah,
and how about like women's cricket? You know, are there many girls involved in the after school clubs?
Yeah, I mean it's not far off 50-50. The girls take to it like the boys, really. I mean, there's the occasional school where it's very boys dominated, but I would say across the majority, it's maybe a 40-60 split or something like that. 60% boys. So it's really good in that sense. But what I wanted to just say about the world qualifiers and giving them something to look forward to is that when I go into these schools now and do the intro classes, at the very end, I tell them, you know, for the first time in the history of the Czech Republic, we're going to be competing in the World Cup. And the kids are just shocked. They're amazed. They're like, what? We have a Czech national team? And I'm like, and I tell them, yeah. And if you continue playing cricket, maybe you're going to be in that team because there's not so many kids that play. And they're all like, oh my God, this is great. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. And I'd also like to point out that living in this cold, cold, very cold country is tough enough as it is. And I barely have the willpower to walk from my house to the supermarket, which is only like 200 meters away, just to buy some milk. But Chris has been out there in minus temperatures teaching these kids cricket and battling through the cold to make this work. And really, I really admire this dedication that you have, Chris. I wanted to ask as well that right now, obviously, the weather's getting better, so I'm sure you're looking to play cricket more outdoors and stuff. But has the last few months always been an indoor sort of thing?
Almost all. Yeah. The after school clubs that run year round, we've had, they've just been inside, and the intro classes, which, like they're seasonal. So they only started I don't know, 5 weeks ago maybe, they've all been inside, apart from one, where they didn't have a hall. So it was a case of, you know, toughen up and you're going to be out in the cold for the morning. And when I arrived at the school, it was -6, I think, or -8, -6. And the kids, and basically we play with the soft plastic equipment. So I had a plastic ball, and they're normally soft and spongy, and they bounce okay. But it was, the ball was so cold that it literally just, like, glued to the floor. It just, I threw it and it just stuck there. So I had to run to the car, and luckily I had a tennis ball from Chile in the boot of the car. So I ran and got the tennis ball, because that can obviously work even in the cold, and it was bouncing. But it, that was extreme. That was really extreme.
Well, as we round off this interview, I'd like to ask each of you individually, what is your biggest challenge in building cricket in the Czech Republic?
The perception. That is changing people's perception of the sport. So even, and this is broad spectrum, we're talking about government agencies, companies that we're trying to get sponsorship from, the kids who have pre-ideas from their parents of how it's going to be, the parents, when whether or not they will allow, even when the kid comes and says to their parent, I really want to go and play cricket. Some of them we know for sure are saying, no, don't be stupid, you're a basketballer or hockey player or whatever it would be. And also we need Czech coaches. So the university students who, you know, we're offering them money to come and be our trainers, but they're looking at the job ad, you know, become a cricket trainer, even though it says no experience required. They're looking at it like, I'm all right, actually. Yeah, I'll just continue studying. I don't need the money that much after all, you know. So it's changing the people's perception of cricket and getting them to get rid of the thought that it's boring, it's terrible, I'm not going to have fun, to actually, it's something I'm open to, and let's give it a go.
I think your doggy, Chili, really wanted to answer that question. So, about the challenges that he faced.
He's like, I'm not getting enough attention. That's my biggest challenge.
I want to talk about my challenges.
So Renata, I just asked Chris, and we were just rounding up this interview now, so I wanted to ask you specifically as well, what do you feel is your biggest challenge in building cricket in the Czech Republic?
Oh, yeah, so many. It's like, yeah, exactly. The cricket is very boring. That's the everybody thinks so. So because they saw it only when they went for a holiday to Sri Lanka and they saw it on TV and they don't understand at all. Then it's the language, because like everything we need to do, I'm the main translator. I'm calling to all the schools. I need to write everything for Chris. I need to solve everything for Chris. So basically this, because he's learning.
It's not a problem for me. Yeah. It's fine.
I'm talking about my problems.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think also like about the sponsors, because they give a lot of money into sport, but they don't want to give the money to something they don't know, I guess. Mm. They would like to so much to introduce the cricket to them and tell them how it is. And we are aiming so many kids and they would really have a good promotion from it. But they don't give us the chance. The chance to give us to this sport is the most difficult what we face, basically. Give us the chance and we can do it. And we know that the kids will be very happy and you will be very happy about it. But we need to get the chance to go.
And even when we're reporting numbers to them, like we've done over 10,000, introduced cricket to over 10,000 kids before the start of this year. So even though we're reporting, you know, these kind of numbers, they still just...
They're still not enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. On the other side, it's very rewarding that you see it works. And it's very exciting because it actually works and we can see like how it's growing. So that's like our baby, basically.
So thank you so much for joining us today, Chris and Renata. You know, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they go about that?
Anyway, just search for Cricket of Art Academy on pretty much whatever platform that you're looking for. Maybe we can give a few links to you to put in the description as well. But it's Cricket of Art Academy. We're on Facebook, Twitter,
everywhere. And we are the only ones in the Czech Republic.
So there's no scam involved. It's only you.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Chris and Renata, for having us, for coming on the show today. I'm sorry.
We thank you for having us.
Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel like I'm, for some reason, I feel like I'm in the hospital. I asked about patients earlier. I think I'm going a bit mad. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was a great pleasure to speak to you. And your story, I'm sure, is very fascinating and amazing. And I'm sure a lot of kids will be really inspired to hear about your hard work and dedication.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in this week to our special episode where we had two guests for the first time. We hope that wasn't too confusing for all of you out there.
And if it was, you know what to do. You have to send us a mail to mail@desioutsiders.com. You can also send your thoughts and feedback on social media, where you will find us @desioutsiders. So
don't forget to follow Chris and Renata on their journey with the Cricket Academy. You can find them on Twitter. We'll leave their website and social media in the show notes below. And thank you again, Chris and Renata, for joining us and sharing your amazing story. We really hope this inspires a lot of young people out there who feel that they want to achieve something but maybe face the same barriers like these guys did.
So until next week, what's my name?
Oh, Nana, what's my name? Sorry.
So until next week, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Mino.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.